What is up, citizen detectives, antler queens, and secret boyfriends? Welcome to the Yellow Jackets Buzz podcast, and get your cork boards ready, because we have Roxana Haddadi from Vulture, lead citizen detective who has been covering the mysteries of Yellow Jackets, and here we are, post-season one, to talk about the outstanding mysteries, the unsolved mysteries in this hiatus. Roxana, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
You've been keeping a running tally on Vulture, which I love. Vulture is probably the media outlet that I feel the best about paying for, because I feel the coverage on there has just been great, and the Yellow Jackets coverage has been top-notch. How are you feeling post-season one in terms of what was paid off and now what is outstanding as we get ready for season two?
I'm feeling pretty good about it. I think the finale did a very good job wrapping up a lot of questions that were established over the course of the season about how these girls who became women interact with each other, what their character dynamics are, what the relationships are. So I think there's a lot of very good, grounded, tangible stuff that sort of wrapped and opened new doors. And then I am very much a sucker for the intangible stuff. So I love all of the, you know, there were some solid introductions to some new weird ideas. We saw better looks at Lottie's altar. We saw the hunter guy, which raises questions as to, has it been his spirit that's been here the whole time? What's been happening with that? So I really liked how it ended. I do have some things over the course of the season that I am still sort of trying to puzzle through in terms of timing and sort of some plot changes. But overall, I think the finale did a really good job, and I'm really excited to see where season two goes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see where they go from here, because they've done so much with paying off things, which is almost unheard of on a show like this, where you have so many layers of mystery and so much that you set up and they give us answers, right? So with the Antler Queen, for instance, and I'm using your article as a cheat sheet, by the way, here as we go. Just to make
Well,
sure
that's very kind. Thank you.
With the Antler Queen, it feels like we know that it is Lottie, the payoff at the end. And additionally, if the citizen detectives out there are getting ahead of themselves and saying, well, maybe Lottie's dead and it's Van who's taken it on, it's Lottie's spirit. Bart and Ashley, co-creators, have come out and said, we are going to see Lottie Matthews in season two.
And I think that's really interesting, because when I interviewed Courtney Eaton, she did confirm, yes, Lottie is Antler Queen. But when I asked about the future, could this be a mantle that passes off and becomes somebody else's? She wasn't exactly anti that idea. So I think as much as it is clear now that in the future, in 2021, there is a cult that is being run by Lottie, I like the idea and sort of the suggestion that maybe the groups break off because there's a different idea of hierarchy or social structure, or maybe the Antler Queen is just this ritualistic thing. I mean, there's so many different ways. It's interesting to me because there's so many different ways that the 1996 storyline can move forward.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that now with the definitive, okay, Lottie was in charge and Lottie is alive. So what does that allow us to see?
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because with this, and I like the title idea, what's also very interesting is that the original description for the show did talk about warring clans, mm-hmm. the idea of tribes. So I think it's very easy to see where we're going with perhaps Natalie and Travis, and maybe Thaisa being like a bit of an in-between.
Right.
Given where she's at in 1996 and her skepticism for Lottie's powers. But yeah, I've always liked this idea of the Antler Queen being a title. I've continually made a reference to the 21 Jump Street episode with the hammer in Juvenile Hall when Tom Hansen goes undercover and takes down the hammer to become the hammer. So I love that idea with Antler Queen, but I think Lottie being alive in the future says maybe this moves, but Lottie is going to ultimately come out of this okay.
Lottie maintains, right, okay, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But Lottie maintains whatever position of power she has. And I think it's how that comes about. There are so many different ways that this could happen. I keep going back to the fact that Lottie, who was not very good at French, is now reciting incantations in French at a makeshift altar. And I also think that we cannot discount Misty, who they've done a very, I think, deliberate job over this season showing that Misty is the one who is exploring the cabin the most. She's pulling out the books with the weird symbols.
Yeah.
She is learning about the mushrooms. She is taking this opportunity to better herself and expand her knowledge. And so I do think that Misty as a double agent is also a real possibility that could be presented in the finale, because she does take that stance behind Lottie. And she is treated from the very beginning with some mistrust and skepticism by the rest of the women in 2021.
Yeah, I think Misty in present day is the big question mark. With Ty, there's potential.
Ty's up there too. Ty is also a major question mark.
She is. With Ty, the question is she conscious of her
of what she's doing?
Right. What she's doing. Or is this a split personality situation? With Misty, though, I mean, I almost wonder if Misty Quigley is the first person in the history of cults where the cult was like, you know, you might want to look into some other options out there. There might be there might be some better. Have you taken a Tony Robbins seminar? There might be some better things for you out there.
Even the cult is like, whoa, she's really intense. Yes, I do. You know, I love the idea of them just like casting Misty out and she had to just do it all herself out in the wilderness.
And Misty in present day, there, I mean, there's a popular theory that Misty is a serial killer, that her date Stan, that was absolutely going to go sideways if Natalie hadn't shown up. We saw what happened with Jessica Roberts. I mean, with Misty, I feel like there's a lot to unpack there in terms of scandalous details. I think that with Ty talked about everything she accomplished. And that heart-to-heart with Shauna and the sleepover they had in 2021, was Ty sacrificing animals and doing things to get everything she wanted out of life? You know,
I think that, again, I think that that is the beauty of this script and of that like final 10-minute montage.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you can pinpoint in those moments. And then you go back to preceding episodes and you're like, wait, what?
But yeah.
The coolness with which Misty dispatches those cigarettes, that was a major point of conversation in our Slack, because our thought was, you know, she probably would have let Jessica live if she hadn't asked for the cigarette. But Misty is abiding by her own moral code, for better or for worse. And is that something that was created out in the wilderness? So, you know, what are their guiding factors and their guiding motivations? And I think there are a lot of hidden clues and sort of paths forward that you could take. I'm really fascinated by when Shauna stabs Adam, but it almost seems like she is traveling through time. And I just mean that figuratively, although I've joked about Jackie being a time traveler. You know, she is really having like this backward gazing moment. And when she's standing over Adam's body, we flash back to the symbol carved into the cabin. So again, I think through editing and just visuals, we're getting this sense of what else has Shauna done and what is capable of doing. And I think that's the question for all of these women. What have they done and what are they capable of doing?
I feel like we're going to have to really develop all of the red shirt, yellow jackets that rotated and we didn't meet in 96, because they're going to have to make us care about them a little bit before they just get savagely murdered and betrayed.
Yes, because there's a yellow jacket one, a yellow jacket two. And a couple of different extras who never even get numbers, but who show up every so often. And I think with Mari and Akilah, that's sort of the question of like, they're sort of the B team. They're on the outskirts. So what is their purpose moving forward? And if we wanted to get really granular, when Nat is at the reunion and she's standing in front of the trophy case, that portrait of the Yellow Jackets has 15 girls on it. Yeah. I think that there have been way more than 15 girls in the wilderness, although we don't know all of them.
I want to say it's 18 if you take the wide shot of who was standing around the graves at the start of episode 3.
And if you look at the lake, I think they're like 18 or 19 at the lake. So it's sort of this question of did they just bring along a couple of backups? Oh, and they're the girls that died in the plane.
Yeah. One of which originally was supposed to be Laura Lee, as we learned from our conversation with Jamie.
Right. So I think it's one of those things too, where to your point, it's, I like the focus that we have had, but probably as we introduce the adult versions of these characters, we will need to expand a little bit further and care a little bit more before Mari potentially falls into the pit and gets eaten.
Just gonna say, who's Pit Girl? And with Lottie as the Antler Queen, just based off the general characteristics of who we saw in the pilot episode, Mari seems like the only logical option if it's a character we're supposed to know and care about.
If it's a character we're supposed to know and care about, we know now that it's not Jackie, RIP Jackie.
Yes.
So I think, you know, I could very well see the groups breaking up if it becomes a one group is being hunted situation. Mari always seemed a little bit better at sarcasm than she did at defending herself. So I could very well see that. One thing that I absolutely will be watching for in the second season premiere, whenever that comes, is who takes the necklace? Who takes the Chekhov's gun necklace? Because it almost seems at this point like a token of bad luck. Like I wouldn't wear it.
Yeah. And I think Mari is the most likely candidate there. Bart and Ashley have said, Bart in particular, loves the Cali theory that there is some present day wilderness action going on. And Cali gets weird there. He loves that, but that is not what they have planned.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
I know. It's a double-edged sword, right? It's awesome having access to the creators of this incredible show. And it's amazing that they'll come out and just tell you things like the word of God. But at the same time, sometimes I feel like, man, if they were cruel, we could just run with this for four more seasons, you know, and just keep ourselves busy with it. So yeah, I like that they acknowledge the theory at least.
I agree. I like that there is this sort of like two-way relationship right now between us and them. I also think it's one of those things where it is fun, regardless of whether your theory is confirmed or not, to go back through the episodes and sort of make a case for what you believe. Because I still think that Adam's tattoo is very intentional, and I do not understand why you would have this man have a tattoo with what is clearly a mountain range circle and a triangle, and then tell me that he is not affiliated with the cult. I mean, come on.
And I want to be very clear about something. Melanie Linsky, I absolutely believe that Adam would have an interest in you. Let me just make that 100% clear. But with Adam showing up at the hotel in the middle of the day and having that tattoo on his back, that's suspect.
Yeah. And that's sort of one of those things where I do think that if I did have to critique something, it's the sense that, okay, if these elements, if these character details, if these narrative details were not part of a larger plan for this character, then they do seem like very random coincidences.
It brings up potentially
too random.
it brings up trust a little bit for me if I feel like the creators of the show are intentionally introducing, not suggested red herrings like the Javi thing, which yes, we all worked ourselves into some mental gymnastics to try and make that work based on the way they structured the scenes and give some circumstantial similarities between Adam and Javi. But I feel like, yeah, the tattoo was a little bit of dirty play to get this wheel spinning.
The other thing, too, that's totally possible is maybe they thought that they could go with that and then just changed their mind. And at that point, it's like, do you want to reshoot the sex scene or do you want to just go with it? And the other thing, too, that we know is that Shauna is not a reliable narrator at all. So somebody also in our discussions in the Vulture Slack had suggested that she have imagined the tattoo, which I think that our perspective is not her perspective. We have sort of a third person remove during their sex scene. And when they jump off the bridge and you see the tattoo as well. But at this point, we know that Shauna can't be trusted in the same way that I think we know Ty can't be trusted and Nat can't be trusted and Misty can't be trusted. The trauma has worked, you know, its way on all of them. And so I think something that we'll keep an eye on, at least I'll keep an eye on in season two, is at what point does any of them realize that? Because I think Misty probably thinks that she's perfectly fine and nothing has been a problem. So Misty and Nat are separate extremes, I think. And I want to see, is there ever a moment where Shauna says, like, oh, hey, maybe I did imagine that the journals were gone. And what does that mean about what I'm going through? And then with Ty, I don't even know how to approach Ty.
So I think that's important to dive into about what's imagined versus what is real. My interpretation of reality has been that what we are seeing, unless it is presented in such a way like The Man with No Eyes, or I feel like they've almost given us some music cues and sort of tone cues to tell us. When, so like, for instance, like you said, like Shauna sort of regressing and time traveling, there were cues there where to say like, okay, this is something reawakening within her that we haven't seen in quite some time. My thought was that Jeff and Randy took the journals to get the symbol down for the ASCII text of the symbol that they sent in the text message. That was my thought. I think Shauna never saw us back. I mean, if you, and this is so weird to look at it like a football replay, but if you look at the sex scene and the way jumping off the bridge, like she never was glancing at it, because I think if she'd seen that, her spidey sense would have been up way sooner.
So do you think that when they were like getting out of this river that they jumped into, he never like swam ahead of her or got out ahead of her? Like, I think that there are ways in which she could see his back. I just think that we don't see it. But again, this is like what TV does, right? It's sort of your sense of what are you choosing to believe is the true perspective?
Yeah.
And how is the show sort of either leading you down that path or subverting your expectations? I think that with Ty, they've done a very clear job of, we might not know why Ty is doing any of this, but she is 100% doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She is eating the dirt. She is terrifying her son. She is killing the family dog, you know? Yeah. So I think that that stuff is very clear cut. I just think Shauna is more of a mystery, and I would love to see more for Nat, because I think that Juliette Lewis is such an exceptional actress.
Oh, so good.
You know, that I want more, and maybe there will be more in this, I'm assuming, cult hostage situation, and whoever they end up casting as adult Lottie, I think facing off against Juliette Lewis will be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. But on the subject of Adam, so... And I hate to be like an Adam truther about
it. No, please, please.
Okay, okay. So Bart's exact quote when asked about Adam and the cult, Bart said something to the effect of he was not affiliated with the group that took Nat at the end of the episode. But do you mean group like the entire organization or that specific cell that was tailing Natal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if we wanted to, you could parse that quote and be like, well, yeah, I mean, he wasn't there to kidnap Nat, but he might have been there to be gathering information about Shauna. You know, I don't think that's out of the question, unless this man is like an REI adventure leader.
I thought he was Misty's hiking guy who asked for her socks. Like, that was what I was expecting in the finale, that Misty was going to recognize him, and he was like a Yellow Jackets groupie.
I thought that Misty was going to recognize him and be like, oh, hey, that's Javi. So... Yeah. You know, so I think that there are different ways that this could have gone. And I also think, to the flip side, by saying like, oh no, Adam wasn't affiliated with the cult, he just was interested in Shauna legitimately, but she is so paranoid and traumatized and agonized that she could never believe that or trust that. Again, I could totally believe that.
Sure.
If the tattoo were not in play.
Okay, so fairness, though, I will say that that tattoo, when we were talking about the earlier episodes and we first saw that tattoo, that tattoo was what gave me the idea of, oh, there's a cult of the Antler Queen out there, because nobody goes through that sort of experience, that sort of story and those sort of visions, and they're not trying to market that or have some sort of nature retreats or something going on. So even if they didn't mean to introduce the idea that Adam was in the cult, that tattoo to me signified there's something greater out there, the impact.
That's possible. I thought that they do that earlier just because when Shauna is bringing home the groceries, it's an Us Weekly or something that has a story about it on the cover. So my understanding was that it's still this obsessive cultural phenomenon that people do not have answers for. And I think you're right. Once that part of it is established, of course there are going to be people who are obsessed with it. Look, we're obsessed with a TV show that is potentially about it. So yeah, I could completely see that there are, you know, QAnon like people who are just trying to figure out every single aspect of what could be going on here. And something that I love is it's established very early on that Lottie has access to money.
Yeah.
Everything we know now about running a cult is that it takes some cash. So, you know, I think the idea of an adult Lottie with resources, I think you're right. I think that sort of raises questions as to how much of this cultural or societal obsession with this story did Lottie herself tap into to potentially further and broaden the appeal of this group that she's leading? And what is their end game? That is, I think, really, you know, really unknown. Oh, I can't tell where that goes.
And that taps into now who we know as the Hunter, who we previously called Cabin Guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot there. But yeah, I think one last note on Adam, and I think this is part of the reason why some of the fans are bummed about this. Mm-hmm. Were you a big Breaking Bad fan?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like over time I grew less into it. But yes, I did watch it all.
Remember season two and all the flash forwards with like the body bags and the explosions? And it was this idea, and people spent all season saying, oh my God, are Jesse and Jane like trying to do something? Does Walt Jr. and Sky get killed? And then it was like, oh, a plane crash happened over his house. And it was like, no, we wanted to show you the significance that his actions had consequences. I felt like the Adam thing was a little bit of that, of saying we wanted to show you how paranoid Shauna was by putting you in her mindset. And I get that, but it's like, it's almost like I didn't want to be taught a lesson. I just wanted a really cool payoff, you know?
Yeah. And I think, again, could have done that without the tattoo, without the highly suggestive tattoo. Could have just been.
Did that.
Yeah. Could have just been this nice random man who wanders into her life, whom she develops feelings for and then realizes that she can't trust. I think that you can do that without the, his hair looks just like Javi's and you're editing scenes together where she's with Javi and then in 2021 she's with Adam. I mean, I respect their dedication to tricking us, but we were tricked.
And the payoffs were so good. It's like, that's why I'm really not like upset about this. In any other show, if this had been like the end of the season and that had been it, it was like Adam's nobody, he was just into her, like it would be kind of like, well, that's okay,
right? But the payoff includes you getting that amazing Linsky and Lewis scene in the bathroom where they're just casually taking apart his body, and you know Shauna has sort of had it with Nat at that point and gives her that amazing real talk of maybe you need to just accept that this is happening. I mean, I can accept that as the end result of everything with Adam.
I mean, and Adam, I think, was a great character. I think we had a lot of great scenes. I think it was a great storyline. And I like that he's real. I mean, the, one of the theories, like, I don't want to theory shame anyone, but, oh, I think maybe it's a Tyler Durden situation, which has been played.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't seen that one. That is upsetting. I'm glad that he was not her son. I saw that theory a lot, and I did not care for that one.
Speaking of which, so that's another big outstanding mystery is Shauna's pregnancy.
They eat it. I'm saying it now. They eat it.
What was Ashley's quote? Something like, look, like, is how far is that really going to get you through the winter? You know, like,
it's It worked in Snowpiercer and it would work here. I mean, I potentially think that might be too dark. Even for this show.
I thought Biscuit was too. I mean, I knew Biscuit was dead, but I did not know they were going to go to that extent of showing us what they did.
Yeah, I wasn't. Also, where are you on what the heart is? Are you on It's Biscuit's Heart?
It's or Biscuit's Heart. And I think that was clarified in an interview. They did so many interviews.
They did.
That I almost need to pay somebody to just make me an index of every interview Bart and Ashley did, because I feel like they really answered every question you could have about anything you're confused about at the end
of
the
season. And different places had different questions.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of answers that were sort of similar, and then a few that just came out in a few places. I'm glad about that, because I also saw a theory that she took Adam's heart and took it for the altar, and I don't know how she could have pulled that off. So
this show, I Googled. I wanted to see, like just like, what's the average size of a dog heart? Thank God it was only drawn. But it's like, the things I'm Googling because of this show.
Yes. I know that we're all being watched all the time, but even under those parameters, like, please don't hold my search history against me.
There is something weird about it, and that's where Misty is almost the perfect character in a way to have almost an avatar for the obsessive fan of something. I mean, Misty, it's weird, right? How, me included, she's a lot of people's favorite character in 2021 in the present day. And it's almost, she's like an outlet for our worst, most obsessive impulses.
They did such a smart thing by making her not a member of the team.
Yeah.
By making her like the equipment coordinator or student assistant coach or whatever she is. They did such a good job by not making her a central member and just being that person on the outside. That manifestation of her opens up so many doors with her friction for various people on the team, her obsession with Coach Scott. And then, yeah, in 2021, it's like she's obsessed with them, but she is one of them, but she's obsessed with them.
Yeah.
And I think you really get that in the reunion where Nat is like, oh, yeah, of course, come join us. Like, that relationship is really fascinating.
And listening to Misty talk about the night to Jessica Roberts, like, that was one of the best nights of Misty's adult life.
Yeah, Misty, I desperately need you to go out more.
Yeah, in Misty's movie, that was the triumphant moment. Like, we got rid of some evidence of a murder that day. I went to my reunion. Everyone wants to talk to. She's doing photo ops like she's at Comic-Con with everyone where they're like pointing out at her in the photo. I mean, that was Misty's Christmas and her birthday rolled into one. So back to Shauna's baby, though. Okay, let's say they don't eat the baby.
Okay.
Weird statements that come out of my mouth talking about this show. What do you think the end game?
I mean, I am strongly in the they eat the baby camp, because I think that that would be a very strong demarcating line between tribes, is like one of you wants to eat the baby, one of you doesn't want to eat the baby. But I think that somehow or another, the baby does not survive, because I don't think that this is the type of show that would do long lost baby. And I don't think it's feasible that the baby could be brought up in this extremely harsh condition. So I am thinking that the baby does not make it. I'm just not sure how the baby does not make it.
So I feel like, and there could be a couple different ways that this goes, right? In terms of what happens, but I feel like we have one big mystery left from the opening credits. Which is this shot right here of a young woman looking over a hill, looking like she's looking down on someone.
Okay.
My thought has been, I didn't know what it was at first. I thought maybe she got back and it was too difficult. Maybe they give the baby up for adoption. Baby ends up tracking down Shauna. Something happens there. I'm almost of the belief, if they don't eat the child, that maybe the child, if there's a group, maybe if Lottie or some of the group stays in the woods, maybe Lottie lays claim to the child, because remember, Lottie was talking about it's inside of you already in terms of hunter and cabin guy. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe there's some element where that outside organization has control of this now grown child, and that gets introduced in season two. Or it could be nothing. I mean, what was it in The Americans? They had the whole thing about like Philip's son that was like a plot, seemed like it'd be a plot point, and then they just forgot about it completely.
I don't think that they forgot about it. I just think it became a thing where, like, Philip's life had moved on from that point. So it was a source of anguish for him. But, like, what are you going to do? Like, track down this son and be a part of his adult life? But we had all those scenes with him. We did. But I don't think they... I refuse to accept that the Americans forgot anything. I just think that it maybe did not provide as much about Philip as it could have. But so is your thought that, like, the baby is born and this person on the hill is, like, watching this? Or is your thought that the person is the grown baby?
Is the grown baby who would now be in, if it's the young woman in her mid-20s.
Okay.
On the hill. I mean, look, I think everything's intentional. And I think maybe the baby remains in the woods, raised by wolves, does become an ultimate killing machine and does track down and murder Jeff. So we get that payoff from the pilot. I'm not ruling that out completely.
The baby is Hannah. Okay.
I was thinking more like Nell, like a Nell situation.
Yeah, I like that. Either one. Well, there also is the moment in the opening credits with Eyeless Man in the forest.
Yeah.
And we never see that either. And I think that that is from the episode where they're going to the lake, but I think they cut it out because there is something that Ty is horrified by when they're walking, and you see Van's perspective and it's nothing. Again, something that I think is interesting is that you have this whole episode about Eyeless Man and then he never shows up again. Aside from, I think it's in the same episode. Yeah, it's in the speech. So I do sort of wonder, was there a purpose to Eyeless Man? Will he come back?
The speech was 7 or 8, maybe.
Okay, so he does come back briefly.
Briefly.
And yeah, and there is sort of the suggestion almost in the editing that Simone sees him. That Ty doesn't, that Simone does. Yeah. So, okay, I'm ready for the return of Eyeless Man because he freaked me out.
Eyeless Man. That for me, so I talked about this before. Part of the reason I started this podcast was I needed a reason to get my wife to watch the show because she was very turned off by the gore in the first 2 episodes. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to tell her that I was watching it because, you know, sometimes with your partner, if you're like, hey, I've been watching, they're like, well, I don't want to rewatch it with you. So I was like watching it in secret, like in the middle of the night when new episodes dropped. And the Eyeless Man episode like freaking terrified me.
Yeah.
That was not a good middle of the night surprise.
Eyeless Man is very scary, and I think that, you know, a lot of people have asked, we did a piece at Vulture, like, how scary is Yellow Jackets, and I would absolutely put Eyeless Man at the top, because I'm okay with gore, actually.
Yeah.
But this menacing figure who has no explanation whatsoever freaks me out more. And I think if he is some sort of entity that has been haunting Ty's family for, I don't know, generations, then something I wonder is, did Ty bring this thing with her when they landed in the wilderness and it sort of saw an opportunity? Or how did she get so all in on the occult stuff? And I think that'll be something interesting as the 1996 storyline progresses.
Well, and so talking about that present day with Ty, so we do have the mystery now of how aware and how much of a conscious participant is Ty, and like the sacrifice of Biscuit, that she does give that look, that she has some recognition in winning the election, that there is some payoff to what she's been doing. But if you look back at those initial drawings, I mean, there is a red-haired figure over Sammy. There is like a shadowy group of people. Like, it's actually really freaking scary if you go back to those early episodes.
Yeah, it's like three people like standing over his bed. There are just so many eyes. So that's sort of why I go back to, like, is this a generational haunting thing that has also passed down to Sammy? And then you sort of have two separate supernatural things happening.
Got to be some tie-in explanation, though, to all that, right? I mean, there has to be some idea in the show, whether it's some sort of darkness or dark figure or dark energy. It does seem like it would be strange to be like, well, Ty's family was haunted by this,
whereas everyone else is haunted by this other thing. Right. You know? No, I agree. And I think that's why they have walked that ambiguous line. She was a child. Maybe she imagined it. Her grandmother was dying. Maybe her grandmother had dementia. You know, like, I think they've built in enough doubt. And I don't have children, but kids are weird, right? Like,
kids are weird.
Maybe Sammy is just really weird. And I think that they're, again, there's some sort of, like, plausible deniability, or just some sort of, well, maybe it's not this, it's some other thing. But yeah. And do we see Sammy and Simone again? I think that's another question.
Oh, I think that marriage is over.
Yeah, I would 100% leave.
You know what nobody talks about in all this? Because I just remembered it too. Natalie and the visions of her dad as well. So, okay, so let me just pose a theory here about, like, what I think. Because we talk about the show being about trauma and about surviving. Maybe in a very unique way, the show is trying to tell us, okay, what are the things you could be haunted by? You can have generational trauma and things in your family history that you carry with you as stress, and that manifests itself in different ways. You could be haunted by your parents directly. Like, maybe they're just shitty parents, or it's like Natalie's dad, like, the really abusive. In the case of Lottie, like, sometimes you could be haunted by what you feel like are your own issues or the way that you see the world. That explains, you know, both with her visions, the blessing and the curse of her gifts. And that's the stuff that I'm saying is, like, we're seeing in the supernatural supernormal mm-hmm. sort of realm. Clearly with Shauna, you could be haunted by your friendships and the conflicts and best
friends. You're haunted by Jackie, by the best friend that you think you killed.
Yeah. So yeah. I think this show is not only telling us about the shared traumatic events these girls went through in 1996, but I think it's speaking to something larger, specifically coming of age as a woman in the 90s, mm-hmm. perhaps. And the different elements that each of the characters is trying to process that they've been carrying. And this was just the catalyst for them coming to terms so. With it.
Yeah. I think that, again, if you're taking all of the supernatural stuff as not real, then I think that is still an exceptionally valid reading of the show, which is that everybody came into this scenario with something that was wrong with their lives that they couldn't control. I mean, we only saw one scene of Van's home life, but her mom is passed out, drunk, non-responsive. We know that Lottie's parents are extremely hands-off, basically just medicating her. Even Travis and Javi, it seems like there's friction there because when Travis's father is saying goodbye to their mom, Travis is like rolling his eyes. So I think that everyone, and this is perhaps too generalized, but I think the 90s were a time when it felt like it was more family fractures felt more out in the open for whatever reason. And I think that there was some sort of uniting factor of everybody's family is fucked up. And we all know that. It's always been like that, right? But maybe now we're more comfortable with acknowledging that, but we're also sort of hiding it because everybody has their own pain. So I think that there is just this sort of sense of when you're abandoned and there's no hope in sight, how do you rebuild a society and like where does your pain go? And I think that in 2021 none of them have let go of their pain, right? Nobody's happy, and Natalie says this in her big speech, like they're just better at hiding it than Natalie is. Perhaps Misty is the only happy person and that's troubling.
Yes, not healthy, which I've used to describe her before, but I will say Misty is very in touch with who Misty is, how Misty's life is going, and she is making the best of it.
Misty eating jerky. I love that little detail of Nat being disgusted by that. And Misty like, oh no, it's delicious. And then the later on, the joke that Nat says about Misty taking Tupperware.
Does she want
leftovers? So the two of them have this really interesting shorthand about what they have gone through that they can almost sort of make into a joke. I don't think Shauna and Ty are quite there because they have so much that is unresolved, hidden, just sort of simmering under the surface.
Totally. And I think this is like a larger way to look at this. So for me, I'm roughly the same age. So I'm 45. I was born in 76. Mm-hmm. I think what you touch upon is really interesting about in the 90s, how like the fracturing of families started to seem more out in the open, and there was almost collective processing of this. And I think about it, like my parents got divorced in 85. I mean, I describe from my perspective as a child in the 80s, I saw a lot of parents that were part of the baby boom generation that became sort of the me generation, and a lot of marriages falling apart. People started thinking about happiness, like things that their parents, you know, our grandparents weren't even thinking about. Right. Like they were ride or die for each other, and like life sucked, but you stuck it out and you went through it. And I think that that sort of fracturing was partially brought on by that. I mean, not to say there weren't other issues at play, but seeing how the children, which would be the same age as the Yellow Jackets characters, like sort of dealt with that. I can definitely say looking back at it now, like, yes, there was a sense of we were all sort of picking up the pieces of our parents' bullshit. In the 90s, and it was still kind of a new idea, which sounds weird to think about now in the year 2022, but like people even talking about this stuff, or like the idea of I come from a dysfunctional family, I was a latchkey kid, like that was new to be able to just talk about that stuff and feel comfortable talking.
And I think there's something so interesting about the fact that the characters that we're following are the ones who came back to their hometown.
Yeah.
And there's something so telling about that too. It's like you went through something horrible, and instead of starting fresh, you just came back to where it happened, sort of where the beginnings of that experience were. And what fuels that choice? You know, like what about this place drew you back here? What attempt at normalcy? And I love that in the beginning you get Jessica saying, oh yeah, a lot of you live off the grid. I just think that there's so many questions I have about who else could have survived. I really look forward to seeing like Van in a cabin at the top of a mountain. You know, Van is hanging out with anybody.
That's kind of the idea though, right? That touches exactly on what you said. It's the idea that we all know people who come back to their hometown and I don't want to say regress, but they nest in a comfortable life similar to the environment they grew up in. They feel a close connection. And then we also know people, or some of us are people, that just got the hell away from that and want to start anew and define ourselves without having the baggage of our shared history.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that it's a very interesting idea that the four characters we primarily focused on are in the former category, and we haven't met those that perhaps through Lottie have seen that reinvention as the more empowering part of their lives that they're passionate about staying in and not going back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and is their passion instead going back to wherever they crash landed?
Yeah.
Something that would be really compelling, potentially, is this even a place you can find again? Mm. Are they unable to find it? And is that another potentially supernatural element? Because I have read a variety of theories that are like, even if they crash landed, the beacon was still going off for some number of hours and they would still be able to be found. But if we're introducing ambiguity here, maybe it's a place that you can't find. Maybe it's like where the Lost Boys are and you just end up there because you need to be there.
Here's an idea, and again, I don't want to fantasy book things too much. This is the problem we get into when we cover wrestling all the time. You fantasy book yourself into a corner. But what if there is an idea that Lottie and whoever is in the group has that it takes the connection of all of them together on a bad show? This could be a terrible plot, but in Yellow Jackets could be awesome. Where no, we all have to get on a plane and like recreate this this portal to what.
Oh yeah, it's the Lost. We have to go back.
Yeah,
it's all the Slayers and Buffy being activated together and like channeling their energy. Yeah. I think there is the potential for if we survived as a collective, we only go back as a collective. I think that there are a lot of really, I don't know. I mean, I hate saying interesting because sometimes it feels like a nothing word, but really interesting places that this could go.
See, and that's why Adam wanted to get Shauna to the cabin in the Poconos. That's like a satellite office.
Poor Adam. R.I.P. Adam. You were just hot and... smitten. I get it.
Like so hot. And the more mysterious he was, the hotter I found him.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Like, oh, there are no answers about your life. That's fine. Who cares?
Like, I get it, Shauna. We've all been there.
We've all been there.
Set aside some very relevant questions.
Here's something that I have not been able to figure out. Can we trust Jeff?
Yeah. So I was just looking at the next thing with who's the blackmailer. So, I mean, Jeff and Randy did this. Mm-hmm. Jeff seems pretty ride or die for Shauna in a way that it has turned around everyone's opinion. Like, I want to marry Jeff. Jeff seems like he accepts her. His intentions were good. I mean, Jeff seems all right in my book, but I do have to set aside the fact that if you go back and freeze frame that ransom drop, like that was clear, unless no one was working with Jeff and Randy, like that was a stuntman driving that car. There were no clues, you know?
I am sort of torn because as much as I enjoy Himbo Jeff, and his sadness that there is no book club, I do think about the fact that he has been lying to Shauna for years and broke her confidence in reading the journals. And so as much as he, you know, stands up to Jackie's parents during that extremely awful meal, I do sort of think that Jeff is in it for Jeff a little bit. And I worry about the potential of that. I also really need him to start a new business because clearly the furniture business is not going to work in the long term. And I think Callie is a real wild card because the three of them, each of them knows something the other does not know. And I think, you know, how does Callie deal with knowing probably that her mom was involved in her boyfriend's disappearance, not knowing the extent to which Jeff was involved? I think Callie, who knows what she does?
Yeah, Callie is definitely a wild card. You know, if you think about Shauna's relationship with Callie, which got better than worse throughout the season, and now they're sort of at a friendly standstill. You know, I didn't even realize until I was going back and looking at Misty's citizen detective file that, like, okay, why would Shauna have had an issue with Callie from the get-go? Well, we know Jackie's birthday was in early November. We saw that Callie was born in early November, not the same day, but like same sign, same relationship. She's grown into someone that reminds Shauna of Jackie. Like, there's so much baggage with them. And now this is just like whatever Boyle had calmed is now simmering back up as Callie knows that her mom, she doesn't know her dad, but she knows her mom is up to something.
And I think Callie is just as curious as the rest of the world about what happened out there and why is it so taboo to talk about. But poor Jackie, she cannot escape. She could not. She, you know, Jackie transcends. Jackie transcends. Yeah.
And not a time traveler, but I'm kind of digging this Encino Man theory that we could just thaw her out present day. Don't even need to recast.
And that's the thing about season two is I think that it would work just as effectively if we did sort of a jump forward in time and see, you know, what the loss of Jackie has created. Or if there's an immediate, like, 5 minutes after Jackie's body is found, what happens next? Because something I keep going back to is the pit is so cleanly dug. How did they dig this really nice 8 foot deep?
No, that's true.
So I don't know. But I do, I am sad that we won't see a grown-up Jackie played by Sarah Michelle Gellar. That was my dream casting.
Well, and so we do know that Jackie is dead. Bart and Ashley have confirmed this in every single interview. They've said they'd love to, that Ella's deal was always for one season. They would love to have her come back.
In the beginning, right.
This is kind of like a sub-mystery. Are they going to eat Jackie's body, or?
Oh, I think that they do. I think that that is the first. Because both Liv Hewson and Courtney Eaton, when I spoke to them and I brought up the, you know, some people think they're not cannibals at all theory, they both said, well, I think Courtney had a quote where she said, well, what if somebody died from other causes and their body was just there? Wouldn't you eat it? So and I almost saw that as sort of a wink at the potential for what could happen.
And I only saw the movie Alive once and read the book, but in Alive, that's what happens is there's a dead body frozen and there is like a big debate and discussion. So I could see something very similar happening with Jackie. That it, and because she's frozen, there is not a sense of urgency plot-wise, so their desperation can kick in and they can really come, like this isn't going to happen in the season opener, but they can really work their way up to this.
And something is that bear was huge. So where did all the bear meat go? You know, like they had one good feast of a dinner and then I wondered where is the rest of it? But something I had sort of worked out in my head canon is Jackie sort of rightfully says that the bear was acting very strange. Maybe the bear was sick. I wonder if the bear does end up having been sick. The girls get sick. Yeah. And they don't have anything else to eat. So it becomes a, should we eat Jackie question. Yeah.
And I like, and again, this is where lesser shows have really failed us, but I like that they showed us fishing traps, the game traps, like the other attempts, even eating grubs. Like I feel that they've been able to convey desperation without like literally starving the actors to convey the desperation.
Although there is still the very logical, you could have built a gigantic fire. Yeah, as a signal fire. I know, I'm just saying.
I know, I think about this. Well, so when we interviewed Jane Widdup, that was the first thing I was like, there was no deleted, there was no radio in that Cessna, right? And she was just like straight up like, no. And like maybe the Hunter, maybe there was no radio in there. Maybe Hunter Guy tore that out. Like even she was like, had there been a radio in there, Laura Lee would have called for help, especially when she knew she was going to die. So there could be a radio in the forest. You know, something could happen. I don't know how they're going to power it up, but it could. It could be out there. So they've been
very good. There could be something. Yeah, there could be something. And I think, you know, they sort of have torn this cabin apart in terms of looking for resources. So I also think maybe there are some things that they just wouldn't know how to do or wouldn't know to do to begin with. But then it's like, what are you there for, Coach Scott? You're an adult.
But, well, he knew how to skin the deer and, you know, thank God for that or else who knows how sick they would have gotten. But so let's talk about Cabin Guy as an outstanding mystery, the hunter. So we know he had a lot of ammo and a lot of porn Mm-hmm. And had carved a bunch of symbols into the house in the woods. And he's French Canadian, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yes. We know all of those things. He had a book about the symbols, right? Yeah. He has a book, The Magus or whatever.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Which Misty is reading in the end. So, and, you know, in Jackie and Shauna's shared dream, when he says, "We've been waiting for you," there is that question of the we just the team, like we yeah. the Yellow Jackets, or we the forest. You know, again, that very thoughtfully rendered ambiguity. And how did he die? Right? I mean, did he engineer his own death? Was he messing with some sort of forces outside of himself? I don't know. And I love that there are so many different places where these questions could go. Something I have wondered from the beginning, and I think this was in my theories piece, is there was some sort of flashing light that drew them to the cabin in the first place. And I cannot help but think, you know, if there is some ghost stuff happening with the hunter, was that his doing as well?
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your theories? What are your thoughts?
So I think it could have been as simple as a glare on a window.
No,
I mean,
Glenn, no. Too easy. Absolutely not.
I know. Well, okay, so but Lottie saw it. So therefore, was it actual or was it perceived? Because as we've seen, Lottie has seen some things.
Did Lottie see it or did Jackie see it? I thought they both saw it.
Lottie saw it. Maybe they both saw it. You could be absolutely right about that. But I'm looking at your piece now. You know, Lottie talking about the plant life, the forest didn't want him to leave, mm-hmm. or something didn't want him to leave. So I think that is one of the mysteries. And I think that in season two, I worry sometimes when shows get too heavy on too many different timelines, but I think mm-hmm. that.
Do you want a flashback? You want a Hunter flashback?
Yeah. I want Laura Lee to have broken the space time continuum, gone back, married cabin guy,
mm-hmm.
started mm-hmm. it all, you know, mm-hmm. could have happened. Leonard's mm-hmm. there, you know, setting it up, and then it ends tragically. Okay. So let me ask you this, given how much we want to see the plot unpacked, I mean, we're thinking 10 episode season. Mm-hmm. Would we be disappointed if Showtime's like, let's run this into the ground. Let's do a 20 episode second season or let's go for more.
I can't see them doing that. I could see if we get to the fifth season as they had intended, if this is like a Ozark Mad Men, you get like a longer final season that's split into two, that I could see. But I think all of the prestige cable channels have been very good at sticking to their episodic orders, and it didn't really feel like there was any fluff over this season. It felt like it flowed well, it moved well, the pacing was good. So I think especially with 10 episodes, I think the format fit. Something that I am just curious about is it feels like there is so much potential in the 1996 story, because mm-hmm. maybe we've gone through 5 or 6 months of time in 1996, and so we know there's over a year to go. But I am sort of curious about the 2021 storyline and whether there is enough in that timeline to be equal to the 1996 storyline, if I'm making sense. I feel like the first season was very equal in terms of attention, and I don't know if 2021 potentially has that same runway.
If not for Natalie getting kidnapped and Lottie being alive, I absolutely would be fine with going to like 25% present day, mm-hmm. 75% past. But I think the mystery of Lottie and the cult and Natalie's abduction, like mm-hmm. this, plus Adam, assumingly this is going to end up on Shauna's doorstep somehow, and she's going to have to deal with this. Ty being perhaps unconsciously still practicing this and what's going on there. Mm-hmm. Misty perhaps has been the sleeper all along and she's still in the cult, or we're going to find out how she fell out with them. Like, mm-hmm. I was super re-energized by the present day storyline with the finale, whereas I thought, I like with the blackmail thing, like the Jeff and Randy part was sort of like, okay, but who's sending the postcards? That mm-hmm. that was always the more interesting part to me. The blackmail part always seems sort of small potatoes compared to who's taunting them from afar.
Mm-hmm. And we still don't exactly know what happened to Travis. There still isn't a real answer there. I think now it's heavily implied that it was the cult, but was he part of the cult? Was he not part of the cult? I do think that in the middle of the season, I had a little bit of wariness about where else 2021 could go. But I think the season finale does sort of open some new doors. Also, Ty is a state senator. How's that going to go?
Yeah, man. So my hope is that this doesn't become like, oh, the cult really wants to get some zoning passed. They want to do some shopping centers. Ty, you got to help us out. Like, I hope there's not too much of that.
Lottie needs to use her TJ Bucks.
Yes. Okay?
She needs a new TJ Maxx. Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want it to go like Terriers, True Detective Season 2, land use.
And I saw that, I certainly don't want to make light of this, but I saw that Bart and Ashley talked about watching a lot of the Nixium documentary, The Vow.
Yeah.
Soccer is going to be their volleyball, right? In the cult?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Soccer, surprisingly, has not made much of an appearance beyond the first episode.
It has not, no. Well, it does become Shauna saying that she never liked soccer to begin with.
Which is shocking. Yeah, shocking betrayal.
Who knew?
Some things you can't take back, Shauna. That hurt Coach Ben's feelings.
Well, I think that something, The Vow and all of the Vow is so fascinating because there is very much this argument to be made that the creators of that doc downplay their own involvement.
Oh, yeah.
Really? So sometimes when I think about, again, unreliable narrators and how much are they compartmentalizing what they have done, I think Shauna and Ty in particular, all of the stuff that they were doing is bubbling up to the surface and changing what they're doing in the present day. So whatever, however they assuage themselves about what they've done, I don't think that can last forever.
Yeah, and I think there are some other mysteries as we look at where things are going. I mean, Coach Ben, probably a pretty solid endgame there with him.
Oh, no. If he goes Misery style, that's possible. I think that's highly probable. I know. Good
Lord. That plotline.
Again, where is Javi? Like, if Adam is not Javi, like, where did he go? I think that would actually be very traumatizing if he gets lost and they never find him. I can see the guilt of that being a lot, too.
So we know from our interview with Kevin, who plays Travis, we know there were two scenes that Travis shot in the finale that were not included. Then we know from an interview on another podcast that Luciano LaRue, who plays Javi, he said he'd shot a scene that was deleted from the finale.
Interesting.
Look, poor kid if he has to die in the same episode as Jackie.
That's true. That's maybe something that if they come across his RIP Javi, if they come across his dead body at another point, then that is, you're not getting crowded out by the Jackie grief.
And everything else that happened in the finale. So much happened in the finale. I think if Javi died in the finale, it would have been
one other thing rather than the thing.
So I think that can wait. I think given that in present day, when they talked about Travis being dead, no one said, like, has anyone told Javi? That to me answers the question, because that seems like that would be the most obvious thing. So I think with Javi, there's a question of what happens with him. There's a question of what happens with with Coach Ben. Present day, we need to figure out what exactly happened with Travis. There was a scene, if you go back to the original season trailer for the entire series, there's a scene of adult Travis like running outside looking really scared. So maybe we'll see
a flashback of some kind.
I think they'll probably explain that scene. That seems like a really good exposition way to show rather than tell. How everything happened there. I think the other thing, and I know we were talking about this off the air, like I'm only half jokingly putting this out there, but Allie, the breakout star of the reunion episode, if you look at the woman in the group who's abducting Nat at the end of that episode, she bears more than a passing resemblance to Allie. I'll just say that.
Okay. I'm intrigued by this. I don't know if I could take much more of the accent, but I will. I will say that I am intrigued, potentially. I really was thinking that all of her hyping up about what Jackie would have wanted, I really thought an adult Jackie would walk out onto that reunion stage. I was a little sad that it didn't happen.
the problem with every season finale of any show is you're really just waiting for the last 15 minutes because normally it doesn't happen. Allie was the high point of the first half of that episode. We were talking about this with BJ Colangelo. It was over the top, yes, but we all know somebody like that. And we all know somebody who behaves that way. So was it really that over the top?
No, it felt extremely realistic for this person who was like tangentially related to this thing to make it their entire personality. You know, when she's like, this is something we all went through. Is it? It doesn't seem like you went through anything. But yeah, it connects to that very early, you know, the pilot framing, which is a little bit like Big Little Lies, like checking in on all of these people and like, what are their thoughts on this? But something that has always stuck out to me, and again, maybe this is just because we don't see a lot of their day-to-day lives, is again, I think it would probably be torture going back to your hometown if everybody is just following you with rumors and theories all the time. So something I wonder about season two is, you know, do we get more of that day-to-day, how do they deal with this sort of life stress? Or do we continue bouncing between these like very tense sort of dramatic plot points?
To the point about them being back at the reunion, see, I could see Misty, if she was on the outs or needed to get back in the good graces, that her getting Natalie there to that reunion and to stay in town for whatever reason was a part of that. And I could even see Allie to an extent if there was something psychologically they were setting up with Shauna where that would have been important as well. Mm-hmm. Because in theory, if with cults, you know, we talk about all the ones people know, but you have to figure there's some secret societies out there that are pretty darn good at the secret part of it. And that's why they're not on everyone's radar. And I think the Cult of the Antler Queen is that case. But I do think Allie, definitely far-fetched, but hey, I need something to get me through these next 10 or 11 months. But with Misty, like, I really don't trust Misty now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Misty is the biggest question mark. Because, you know, even with Ty, the stuff that she's done has been to her inner circle, which is terrible. I mean, but she's been traumatizing her own son and killing the family dog, and things have seemed very intimate. Misty sort of seems to have a grander idea of right and wrong, doesn't have any qualms about killing Jessica. And so I think that her sort of sleeper agent, what else is she willing to do status could go pretty far. Also, how many people has she potentially killed at her job?
Yeah.
Oh, bleak.
Yeah.
Super bleak.
It really is. And it opens up a lot of ideas. So I guess with that in mind, how do you feel about the show going from being more intimate and talking about the day-to-day lives of these present-day characters and what they've been carrying and how they've been dealing with it to now the idea that we're opening things up to this larger element in the present day and season?
I mean, I think that I'm excited for it because I always like world expansion.
Yeah.
I think the show has been pretty charted out. And so I think that taking a grander scope, I can't imagine them, you know, dropping the bag on that. In the same sense, although we've had some really good heart-to-heart moments, we still have the sense that these women really don't know much about how their lives went in those 25 years.
Yeah.
Jeff acts like he hasn't seen Ty since high school when she stops by the house. They clearly had, you know, a no communication order with Misty. And Nat has been bouncing in and out of rehab. So I think because they are all still struggling with this, I think we'll still get that strong sense of intimacy. I think just the context of the conversations will be different. I think it'll be less like, what have you been doing? And more, how do we continue to deal with this and wrap our minds around how this is going? And I have, you know, I have some issues with Lost, but I think that Lost still did this really well, where every season continued to give you more character development and more reveals into the layers of people. And I know that Lost was a guide for this show. So I think there's potential there for it to remain intimate, even if we're getting new people like Hunter Guy, even if we're getting a stronger sense of Ty's potential split personality, I think even if we're getting Lottie, man, look, there's so much you can do with an adult Lottie.
Oh, yeah.
And so many things that you can fill in terms of her interactions with these people that I don't think you're going to miss any of that intimacy.
Yeah. And I'm really curious about it just to see where it's going to go and how they're going to pay this off. Because I think mm-hmm. that when you get to a season finale of any show, there's a lot of fans that are naturally disappointed. Just if anything, because they have to wait and perhaps whatever you're leaving them with isn't good enough to chew on, no pun intended, for, you know, the next however long that we need to make it through. But I feel like people are so amped right now. It's really just a question of like, how are the creators and Showtime going to maintain mm-hmm. this energy and keep everyone excited before season two?
The Lottie reveal is so good. I mean, I think the Lottie reveal went so far in getting people to ask what the hell is going to happen next. I'm definitely going to be there to watch.
Yeah.
That I agree with you. I think that there needs to potentially be something to sort of remind people of how the show ended and where it's going. But, you know, I also think like Game of Thrones, again, this isn't doing Game of Thrones numbers, but Game of Thrones didn't feel the need to do that. Like some of these shows that were confident enough to stand alone didn't feel the need to do that. So maybe we do get like a tie-in comic book or something, or like a standalone one-off. But I think I'm comfortable with where it ended, and I'm just excited for what comes next.
I think it's going to just be fantastic to see it play out. So, you know, we were talking about this off the air, whether they had some script leaks or mm-hmm. Showtime's press site that was putting up basically spoilers.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
In some cases, 2 weeks out from an episode. Do you think they locked down the Lottie casting and like all details before the next season debuts?
I hope so. I want to be surprised.
Yeah.
I know that, again, they did so many interviews afterward that it seemed like they were taking all suggestions. So I know that Shannon Sossaman was a recurring suggestion. And I know that Courtney, when I spoke with her, said that she would really like to see an adult actress who had her specific like ethnic heritage. So I think, you know, I hope that they lock it down, because I think so much of the appeal of this show has been that week to week communal, we're all experiencing it at the same time energy. And I think that locking it down enough that we all experience the adult Lottie reveal at the same time would be so satisfying. I really hope that they can maintain the purity of that.
You know what was crazy is when I discovered the show back Thanksgiving weekend, I remember reading about it before when mm-hmm. it was in development. But like, I don't check Deadline every day. I don't pay super close attention to things. So I saw it was out and started watching it. Juliette Lewis was a surprise for me. And Christina Ricci, I leapt off the couch because I didn't know. I didn't know she was in this. And I think that the more we can do to preserve that element of surprise and delight is like so important for a show that people are pouring over so much. And I think, you know, the creators, even though they worked on a show based on an alternate reality game before this, I don't think they knew they were making a show people were going to freeze frame so intensely and just look for every possible detail to almost try and get ahead of the mystery.
Yeah. I mean, we were at Vulture, we were freeze framing that opening shot and thinking like, what body parts of a person could this be on the spit, you know? And that's like obsessive.
Yeah. Wow.
That's too much. But I do think that they probably did not anticipate this level of viewership. But now that they know, it becomes about like closing the ship down, right? And other shows have done it, I think, well enough. So I think it just becomes, you know, like maintain those NDAs. And if the trades could just not report names, that would be great. I mean, that comes, but that comes down to agents too. You know, like an agent might want to leak, like, okay, my person got cast in this buzzy new role. Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of like everyone in the ecosystem sort of coming together to honor that experience.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise would be good. And I'm really excited to see where it goes. So I think we've covered everything outstanding.
I think so.
Going to season two. The other thing that this is just on my wish list, you mentioned like doing something standalone, but let's do the schlocky 1996 TV news special, the mystery of the Yellow Jackets. Let's interview young Randy and Jeff and Jackie's parents and Allie We could see the emergence of Allie, like realizing, like, oh my God, everyone wants to talk to me about this.
That would be really fun because, like, I love Dateline. I'm very much a sucker for like news magazine, 1 hour long formats. Also, something that would probably be fun is if they like released like a National Enquirer or like a People magazine or something that was like devoted to They Came Back. Let's theorize about that. And I think that would be a fun way to honor, again, how engaged the viewership has been. If you sort of put out a product that honors that, that would be cool. God, I would buy that.
And there needs to be a song, because you know, in the mid-90s, every artist, like, you know, like the band Live, like Bush, mm-hmm. like, you know, I was really inspired by this disappearance mm-hmm. that happened in yeah. history. And this really informed the lyrics of this. And we need, like, I'm just going to say Deep Blue something, because I feel like we need to toss them something. Deep Blue something needs to write the like song about mm-hmm. like, where did you go? The Yellow Jackets charity single to fund the search. Where did you
go? Yes, that would also be really funny. You know, I do like that we did not get flashbacks to like everybody looking for them. Yeah. I think it was smart to maintain that isolation that the girls are feeling, that we don't at all see the rest of 1996. And I'm actually okay with that. If they did like a standalone, I think we can return to that time. But I actually don't need to see like teen Jeff like worrying about where his girlfriends are.
I think like on a bad show, like season 3, okay, we're bringing in Lou Diamond Phillips, who's the marshal that's in charge of the search effort. So we're going to just parallel him for the season. Like, he's going to have a solid B arc of him looking for the girls.
Although I love Lou Diamond
Phillips. I do love Lou Diamond Phillips. But you know what I'm saying, though? Like, you kind of know, like, how much payoff is there really going to be for this storyline?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree.
I think much like Breaking Bad did with the German company and whatnot, like, you can mm-hmm. just have a scene of some befuddled searchers
mm-hmm.
and that's all you really need. But yeah, I think the standalone news episode, like, that's something they could rush in production and get out by summer.
Yeah, it's like, you know, how Euphoria did like a couple of standalone episodes like in between season 1 and season 2. I think it's possible. I just worry that if they're going to be devoting so much to even getting season 2 out the door by the end of the year, maybe it's too much to ask for like 5 months from now to get more Yellow Jackets content. Get
Eduardo Sanchez, who directed the finale, who did the Curse of the Blair Witch TV mm-hmm. special for Sci-Fi Channel in 99, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. you know, totally separate crews, something. Just mm-hmm. feed our appetites here.
Yeah, that would rule. Something. Yeah.
Well, Roxana, thank you so much for joining us. I'll put links in the show notes where everyone can follow your stuff. Cool, check out Roxana's stuff, Vulture. She's incredible. Great, great writing. What else are you excited about? What else are you watching lately that you're really into?
I have started watching, well, I finished it, but I was watching The After Party, which is on Apple TV Plus. It premieres tomorrow, actually. And it's sort of like a rotating perspective style comedy murder mystery. That's been sort of fun. And it also lends to some theorizing, that same sort of collecting of clues. And something that I'm excited about, which will probably hit the gore quotient, is Netflix has a new like Korean zombie splatterfest called All of Us Are Dead.
Yeah,
and that premieres that premieres on Netflix tomorrow, and that also looks fun. So that's how I'm trying to feed my twin mystery and gore obsessions for the time being.
Yes. And then I guess the big other thing to unpack between now and the next season, Christina gets submitted for supporting actress. How do they deal with submitting the leads for the Emmys?
I mean, can you submit a couple of people as leads? Possibly, but I think that the show in general, I think Christina Ricci and Juliette Lewis are both credited as like in the opening credits. So I could see both of them going for supporting. And then you have the actresses who play Ty and who play Shauna as lead. But I don't know where that leaves the young actresses. You know, I don't know. That's a real question. I think, again, this is probably like a, you look to Game of Thrones to see how they figured out the model of what do you do with the gigantic ensemble cast? How do you parcel people out?
We'll see. Very excited. Well, Roxana, thank you so much. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you back here. We got more off-season content coming up on Yellow Jackets Buzz. Take care.